practice good etiquette.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
I want to talk about the turkey season that I wrapped up. And May 7th, I got the first bird, just over 18 and a half pounds. 10 days later, May 17th, I dropped a 21-pound bird, 9.5-inch beard, 1-inch spurs, just got both birds tagged out mid-month, and I could sleep until 5. It was glorious. So I thought, I promised a 16-year-old who's working on his, he just turned 16, been taking and fishing since he was 8 years old. He wants his first turkey. So I was up 3:30, three more mornings, and I took him out. We got a bird close, but it was a hen. We just never got a tom, and he's got him on his property. And then I wake up this morning, we had the windows open last night because it was cool, and there's a tom in the field right across the road from our house, gobbled 10 times this morning at 5:30. And I can't do anything about it except enjoy it. But I did have a wonderful turkey season, a lot of early mornings, a lot of encounters, and two really, really good birds. And a shout out to my daughter-in-law-to-be, Amanda. She has shot three jakes that my son has called in for her. And just a few days ago, she dropped a tom, her first one. I believe I had a 9.5-inch beard, 1-inch birds, almost identical to my bird, except for the weight was a little bit lighter. But she got her first 2-year-old bird, her first mature tom, and good for her. They're getting married in September, and we're anxious. We're looking forward to that. So my daughter-in-law to be.
You are going to be crying more than the bride when your son goes up there.
I'm an emotional wreck at weddings.
I bet.
I'll admit it. I'll admit it.
I bet.
I wear my heart on my sleeve.
You do in general. Anything. Yeah.
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 I'm picking, obviously, but I'm acknowledging and I'm appreciating that you are like that. You know,
that's who I am. I can't change it. I can't hide it. I don't try to because
there's no use in trying to hide that. You're not going to contain that now.
I feel miserably when I try. But it goes to the passion that I have.
Yeah.
The love that I have for family.
It's good.
And for all the things that I'm involved in. That's why I do them.
Yep.
You know?
No, it's good.
So, and we talked a little bit, a few episodes back, about crappie and bluegill. And I have been hammering. Started with the crappie. And the 17th, when I shot that big tom with a dear friend of mine, I spent a lot of time with in the woods and on the water. He's got access to 600 acres and I can go on it as long as he's with me. And he was tagged out by the third day as per usual. And he's like, he'd been going back just to look at the birds and listen. He says, I don't know why I've been doing that. I said, yeah, I do. He goes, yeah, I do. He goes, it's a sickness. But he said, if you want to go over there, I said, you know, these birds here have been giving me fits. I zig, they zag. So yeah, I've been wanting to go over there just for one day and give it a run. It was a foggy morning. They weren't talking at all, but we did some soft tree calls. And then out of the blue, this bird starts, he gobbled three times and I took him at 30 yards. So I said, hey, that was at 6:13 a.m. And I said, we got the whole day left. That's the great thing about turkey hunting. You want to do some crappie fishing? He says, yeah. So we went to a lake. We picked up. It was tough. We got 22 crappie, but we got some nice keepers. The very next day, I went with my doctor, a dear friend of mine, Dr. Greg Riss. We fish a lot together because he's very intuitive. He would be a tremendous tournament partner, I think, because he's like me. He's very analytical. We break down everything as it's happening and extract all the information we can from the fish and what they're telling us. He's just very good at that. That's rare. Most people don't do that. And so we're two peas in a pod. We went to a lake. We had never fished together before. And we got 58 crappie. Just really, really did
good.
This
is last week?
This was May 18th.
Okay.
But then we came into the full moon.
Right.
So I switched to the bluegill. The full moon was the
23rd.
And on the 22nd, I did a bluegill run. It was tough. They were skittish. If you could see them, they wouldn't bite. We got 19 big. I mean, this lake, you can hardly get your hand around them. And then I didn't fish on the 23rd, but on the 24th and 25th, I did. The 24th, I caught 45 with another guy at a lake I fish a lot that's also known for bluegill you cannot get your hand around. And then on the 25th, I went back with my doctor, Greg Riss, again, to a lake I fished once 16 years ago. I had to look it up on a map in order to find it. It's in Otsego County, way up on top of the mountain. And I had gone there 16 years ago with a guy I worked with who said, I want to show you this place. It's the biggest bluegill I had ever seen. But he hadn't had access to the two other lakes I had fished previously where, I mean, you can't hardly get your hand around them. These are platter-sized bluegill. Now, he had that in his lake too, a place called Goey Pond up on top of the mountain in Otsego County.
Mm-hmm.
Greg and I had never fished it together. I fished it once 16 years ago. Didn't even remember how to get back to it. We went up there, and at the launch, putting the boat in, all we saw was these little tiny bluegill all over the place. And I thought, things have changed a lot in 16 years. Not totally the case. We did find, and I did an Instagram post on this, showing the size of the fish we were catching and a colony of beds. Having never fished it together before and me not having seen it in 16 years and had only fished it once previously, we fished half that lake. We whacked 95 bluegills that day in 5.5 hours, 95, and did not keep 95. I have no interest in cleaning that many bluegill. We kept just over 20 big, huge platter size bluegill. And then I went out yesterday. Since the full moon run is done, I went out yesterday for crappie, and I hit one spot. They move around all the time. I went to where my turkey partner and I had caught a bunch of them, and they weren't there. So I just kept looking, and in front of this one beaver lodge, they love wood, I anchored down, and I caught 73 crappie off one spot in an hour and a half. It was crazy. So that brings us up to date on turkey season, bluegill and crappie. And one last thing, I said I would break 36,000 bass caught and released in the month of May.
And
I got 3 days left, and I need 38 to break 36,000. So after we're done recording, I'm probably going to go out and try to close the door on that. If not, I do have a bass boat trip with a student from the bass club from the college tomorrow, and we'll get it done between the 2 days. I will break 36,000, and I'll update that on my next Instagram post and our next recording.
Well, good.
But we want to pick up where we left off with tournament do's and don'ts, etiquette, all that stuff. I only covered a couple points in the first installment, and we want to keep...
We didn't chit-chat about my weekend.
Well, tell me.
Well, do you want to hear it? You seem awfully ready to go into your stuff.
No, talk about your weekend.
It'll be fast. Because I didn't catch anything, so it'll be a fast story.
Back on Honeyoy Lake.
At Honeyoy... Well, I was actually on Canadice Lake. I was staying in Honeyoy, but I went to Canadice Lake. And Canadice Lake has a zebra mussel issue, and the water is exceptionally
clear.
Yep.
And the weed growth has come back. Yeah.
Yes, it has. And 25 feet down, you can see we weren't in that deep of water, but we were all on the shore. Saw a lot of beautiful fish, watched a lot of bass follow and reject. And because I think that there was
clear water too.
If you can see the fish, they can see you.
Yeah.
Is that safe to say?
Exactly. Bingo. Right.
So there was that. Saw about a 20-inch brown trout cruising along the shore. That was pretty neat. And want to give a shout out to Doc's Bait and Tackle in Honeyoy, Roy. The return of the old school bait shop. But this one's stocked to the gills. Because out there, you've got the closest Bass Pro would be Auburn, which is like an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
Same with me out here. I can't get Yamamoto Senkos at Walmart. So I got to stock up whenever I go to an actual, you know, reputable fishing store to do so. So like I
Pro Shops in Utica plug.
Right, which I do go there when I can.
Yeah, me too.
So, but when I was out in the middle of nowhere, this guy does a good job. A lot of people are relying on him for what they can't get out for. Yeah. God, I spent $100 without even blinking an eye in that place.
That's so easy to do.
And got a hat to boot. Shout out to Doc's Bait and Tackle. Yeah,
you sent me pictures of you cleaned house.
That's a pretty good run for $100, right?
Yeah, no kidding. You cleaned house. You're going to go through those on your lake, though.
I will, but I did also get the rubber bands for when I rig wacky. The O-rings, yeah. So they'll
And the O-wacky tool. I've showed that to a lot of people at doing seminars at Bass Pro.
That tool's amazing great.
How many people don't know about that trick? And for any listeners who, what are you guys talking about? If you use a Senko and you wacky rig it in the center, when you put the hook through, the plastics in these are impregnated with salt. I really think in some cases that makes the plastic a little bit softer. The Senkos tear real easy. And if you wacky rig them, which is with a hook in the center, they, after a few fish, it's pretty well shot. Well, there's a way of preserving that yet maintaining that subtle falling action. It's, you put an O-ring, there's a tool for it. It's like the bottom half of a ballpoint pen. It's an aluminum tube that it's narrow at the bottom and gets wider at the top, just wide enough to slide a Senko in. And it's got O-rings on the narrow part, and you just roll one up to the edge of that tube, slide your Senko in halfway, and then just roll the O-ring off onto the Senko. And then when you put your hook underneath the O-ring, and it doesn't penetrate the Senko, so it doesn't tear it. You can catch a lot more fish on a wacky rig Senko when it's rigged with that O-ring because the hook never goes through the plastic. However, if you get around super aggressive fish, I've had them grab that Senko and just rip the whole thing through the O-ring, and I get back an O-ring on my hook. Like, well, that one didn't work. But most of the time, that's not the case. Most of the time, law of averages, if you average it out, for the most part, your Senkos will last a lot longer if rigged with an O-ring because they don't tear. So
yeah, I had seen them before and never really quite grasped the concept. So thanks for that explanation, Roy.
I got one in each of my bass boats. I got one in my day box. And I think I still have three in a package on my pegboard. So I won't be without one. It's a real, real handy tool. But to pick up where we left off talking about tournaments and getting in over your head like I did, I want to move on to one of the questions that Steve Smith asked was, can you cover tournament etiquette, do's and don'ts? And I'd like to address that. The first piece of advice would be, I mean, if you join a club or if you sign up with an organization, be it regional, local, whatever, every club, every organization has their own rules. Study those. Get a copy of them. It's easy to make a mistake if you don't know the rules. And every club is different. They each have their own set of rules. Some you can use in that, some you can't. You use one, you're disqualified. Most all tournaments have the same rules in regards to safety, where you need to have an operating kill switch on your boat. You have to wear a vest when the big motor's running, things like that. But study the rules, because every once in a while, they'll have something that another club or most organizations don't. And if you're not aware of it, you can make a mistake, get yourself disqualified without even knowing you did anything wrong. But the other side to that is, if you're going to compete, And there's guys out there that cheat, and I don't understand that, because the whole reason I got into tournaments was to measure my ability against the other fishermen to see where I stood. If you cheat, it messes up the whole, it's not a level playing field, and you don't get a true read for where you stand. So study the rules, but here's the important part with that. Have integrity, have personal integrity. Don't stretch the rules. Don't bend the rules to accommodate yourself. You're going to have to live with that, and I don't want that on my conscience. So,
well, look at those guys that got tagged for stuffing all those weights down the fish.
Yeah, that was a big walleye tournament, and everybody when that tournament went down, those guys in the walleye circuit that had been putting weights in fish, lead weights, wrapping them in small walleye fillets so that you couldn't feel them. And guys knew they were doing it, but and they had taken lie detector tests and failed, but they never got pinched until somebody cut a fish open and all these weights spilled all over the ground. My hat's off to that tournament director because he saw what was about to unfold. And he said, nobody's going to touch these two. We're going to let them leave and get out of here, because he was, I guarantee you, he was concerned about liability.
They were going to get people throwing those weights at
them. They were going to string those guys. They were short of stoning them. It was going to be bad, and there would have been a tremendous liability on that tournament organization and the director and the people in charge. So he was smart to do that. But it came out they've been doing it for years and at zero integrity. What a couple losers. Aside to that, the day that I retired from my job with the state, the auto mechanic came up to me, smiled and said, Roy, it's been great getting to know you, being friends with you. And I know you're going to be fishing a lot, but enjoy your retirement. Shook my hand and I felt something. And I looked down and it was a lead tire weight. And he winked. He goes, I know you fish tournaments. I said, get that away from me. I laughed so hard. I'm like, no, that's not who I am. And he laughed. Good guy. But as far as etiquette, here's the thing too. Most clubs have a 50-foot or 100-foot rule where you can't fish within that distance of another competitor. In our club, it's if they have their anchor or their power poles down, you have to give them 50 foot. That's the rule in our club. And guys are good about that. But most of us know each other on a first name basis. Case in point, Sacandaga Lake pulled up to a spot. We ran to our first spot and an island we wanted to fish. And there's a guy right against the shore fishing the same island. And I pulled up to him and I said, hey, how you doing, John? He says, good. Wouldn't look at us. Didn't want us to see what he was throwing. I said, this is the same spot I was going to start on. I'll give you room. Are you okay with us fishing the same spot? Have a discussion. If you pull up and there's somebody on the spot you're going to fish, talk to them. You know, open a conversation. Don't just pretend like you don't see them start
fishing. Why wouldn't you just go find another spot if someone's already there?
Well, I'll get to that. My thing is have a game day plan. I have a plan A, B, C, D, so on down the line. I always have another spot to run to. But if I have a starting point, there's a reason I want to start there first. It's either a good morning spot or with the light conditions, that's where we want to go. I always want to start on my number one spot. That's usually my best spot, unless I got a spot that, because of the day that we're going to have and the weather we're going to have, I've got some, but we'll go there, but that's about 11 o'clock. That's when we need to go there. That's when they're going to fire up there. So, right. And that's for every tournament. I try to have a game plan with several backup plans. So I pull up to this spot and this guy's there. I said, John, this is where I was going to start. Are you cool with us fishing here? I'll give you space. And he goes, oh yeah. Just, you know, give me space. But in practice, we had found them relating to the islands, but at the first break, which was about, I don't know, I'd say probably 100, 150 feet off the shoreline of the island. And he was right tight. He was way too shallow. He was fishing a foot of water. And in practice, we'd found them out on that first break, that first drop off. So I said, no problem, John. We'll go out. We'll give you plenty of room. And in short order, we had a limit in the boat and we're culling. And he hadn't caught a fish yet. And finally, he just pulled up his trolling motor, cranked his outboard and blew right past us saying, you can have this spot, and took off. The thing was, we had had that conversation first. And that goes to etiquette. So talk with people. If they're on the same spot you want to fish, just have that conversation and make sure they're cool with you being there. By virtue of the fact that they got there first, it doesn't matter what your intent was. If they got there first, sorry, it's their spot. And I've been on both sides of that. But I've had guys move move right in. We fished a tournament on Saratoga Lake, and this is going back way back to the beginning days. This was that one tournament in 5 years when I first started that we finished 17th out of 147. We had done well. We were fishing up a creek and fishing a lily pad field, and we were catching and culling fish. And there was everybody else was on the other side, and we had a limit. We brought a fish in the boat, nice largemouth, weighed it, no help. I made the rookie mistake of releasing it in front of everybody, which automatically told them that was a good fish. They chucked it back. They got a good limit. Next thing I know, there's four boats right around us where we couldn't even cast. And that lacked total etiquette. That goes to those four other competitors. And I didn't even know who they were. It was such a big, you know, almost 150 boat field. I didn't know who these guys were. And I was a newbie. And they're like, all right, we're fishing there. And they moved right in and cut off our water and everything. Total breach of etiquette. Nobody said anything to us. They just moved right on top of us, wouldn't look at us, and started trying to catch our fish. And that was not cool. I wouldn't do that. So if you're out there looking to start tournaments, don't do that. It's not cool. On the opposite end of that, fished a tournament. And this is fairly recent. This is like 2 years ago. Fished a tournament and with a club. I think there was like 30, 35 boats in the field that day. And the spot I wanted to start on was a steep bank with a steep drop off. Great morning spot. I'd started on that spot before and caught limits. The fish just hang there. I get to this spot and I like to go to the upper end and then come down through. Well, there was a boat had just pulled into that upper end, beat me to it by like 30 seconds. I told my partner, that's okay. We'll just, never mind. I'll do a U-ey and go down and I'll start at the bottom end of this. I mean, we're like 100 yards apart. And the rule in that club, again, is 50 foot. So we're 20 times that distance. My initial cast, I hook a keeper. Get him in the boat, drop it in the live well. I said, that's why I wanted to start on this spot. Out of the blue, the guy from this other boat, 100 yards upriver, yells down to me, that where you're going to fish? And I said, actually, I was going to start right where you are, but you got there first. So I'm respecting that, and I'm coming all the way down to the bottom, and I'll fish it until we get about 50 feet apart, and then I'm good. He cops an attitude. He's like, oh, I wouldn't do that to anybody. That's all I'm saying. I wouldn't do that to anybody. I said, what are you talking about, man? We're 100 yards apart. Well, that's all I'm saying. I wouldn't do that to anybody. This guy would not drop it. Super obnoxious. And we were 100 yards apart. We're not crowding anybody. We're 20 times the distance in the club rules. I turned to my partner. I said, this guy's not going to drop it. However, we end up having a good day. I don't want anybody to protest at the end of this tournament. So let him have the spot. Let's go to plan B, which is what we did. And I didn't fire up and go blasting past that guy, shooting a big wake across his water. I idled 100 yards. And when we went past him, he turned his back and wouldn't look at us. Okay, your problem, not mine. And I made sure I idled a couple hundred feet past him before I dropped the hammer and took off, so he would have nothing to complain about. But my concern was he would protest us for being too close. And it was 100 yards. But you never know how somebody else is going to react. So right. I practiced total etiquette. I had caught a keeper on my first cast, wanted to keep fishing because I felt I could get a limit there. But I ditched that because of his attitude. And that goes to having proper etiquette. Sometimes you got to just let the other guy have it. Even though I believe he was in the wrong, I was fully within the rules, way 20 times into the rules, but he didn't like it that I caught a fish on an area that he was working his way towards.
Right. It's
the only thing I can figure. And we never saw him swing on a fish. So I left a spot where I really felt I could get a limit just to avoid a backlash afterwards, which would have been a lie would have been incorrect if he had chose to protest us. We were right and he was wrong. But anyway, that goes to etiquette. I left it to him, and that's all well and good.
A little bit of drama out there, huh?
Oh, there is sometimes. I've seen stuff go almost to a fist fight. I'm like, good grief, people. You know, guys get upset over stuff. Testosterone builds and my fish, your fish, all that. In my club, we know each other. We'll share water, and we're good with that. But that's not every club. If you go into these big regional events where you know a few guys, but you don't know most of the guys, you got to practice good etiquette. Yeah. And that's a conscience call a lot of times. But don't do something to another angler that you wouldn't want to have them do to you. That's the best way to put it. Practice the golden rule. Etiquette is a lot heavily influenced by the golden rule. But one thing that I have, this has been the hardest thing for me to do in tournaments, and I think a lot of guys can relate to this. We talk about fishing memories or fishing history. And if you don't know what that is, if you've got a lake that you got a spot where you won a tournament on, the very next time you go to that lake for a tournament, it's very hard to fight the urge to go there because you won there last time. Go check it when you pre-fish, when you practice, go check it. But the hardest thing for me to do, because I have so much history on so many bodies of the water that we fish, it's hard to approach it like a brand new fishery. Mm-hmm. And that is the best approach for a tournament. Every day is new. There are no 2 days identical. Now, granted, you're going to have some spots on lakes that consistently produce. That's a little different from fishing history or memories. Case in point, we had a tournament on a lake new to our club a number of years back. I had fished the lake, good grief, it had been like 15, maybe 18 years since I'd fished on that lake because I used to live up in that area and my partner had never fished it. I said, well, it's been a lot of years, but I know there's big bass in it. So I'm going to go pre-fish it a couple days. And I did. Without knowing it, I found a flat where I could catch him on a jig and craw. And I mean, nice big ones. I did that the first day I pre-fished it with a friend. And then my partner came up and pre-fished it with us. And we went back to that flat and we caught good ones. I had no idea it was a community hole. I didn't know that. I just found it on my own and was told later, that's a community hole. It's one of the best spots on the lake. Well, that's where we concentrated for the tournament. And in that tournament, we had it to ourselves for some reason. My partner and I, we won that tournament and we set a new club record for the highest winning weight in a tournament. We had, and this was upstate New York, so you keep that in mind. We had a bag that was 5 largemouth that was 20 pounds and 20.25, I believe it was, 20.24, 0.25. It was 20 and a quarter pounds. And the club had been around at that point, good grief, like 25, almost 30 years. And we broke the winning rate record for a club tournament. And that was a real good one, but there were a lot of good weights. There were guys coming to the scales with 18 and 19 pound bags thinking they got this. And then we dropped ours on the scale. And the president said, that's a new club record, guys. And it stood for quite a few years. It's been broken since then. But the following year, they put that lake on the schedule again. And we said, all right, we know what we're going to do. I didn't even go and pre-fish it. Big mistake. This tournament was a little bit later in the year. I believe it was the end of September, and we had had a severe cold front come through 2 days before the tournament. And when I got there for the tournament, I checked water temperature, and it was about 10 degrees colder than I anticipated. I said, that's okay. The area we're fishing, that flat, that's deeper water, they'll be moving out to that because, you know, it's going to be more stable than the shallows. Well, in that tournament, we fished history. We fished where we had won, and we stayed in that area. And we caught fish, but we didn't catch any that measured 12 inches. We came in with an empty bag. We didn't weigh in a single fish. People thought we were sandbagging. Like, where's your fish? And we caught fish, but we didn't get any keepers. They're like, yeah, right. You wait until everybody weigh in to drop your big bag. I said, I wish. Guys still had, I think, 17 or 18 pounds won that tournament. They still had a real good bag. And there was a lot of good bags. We saw so many people fishing tight to the bank. And during the tournament, we were saying, they ain't going to catch anything there. Well, we were wrong. That's where they caught their fish. And I thought, because of the drop in water temperature and late in the year with the dying vegetation depleting the dissolved oxygen, that the fish would leave those shallows and they'd come right to our spot. And it was the total opposite. The dying vegetation actually held warmth in the shallows. And despite the oxygen levels, the big fish were there because the water was warmer. It had dropped so drastically with that cold front 2 days prior, it kind of shocked the fish that didn't move and gravitate to that warmer, shallow water. It was a unique scenario. I hadn't run across that before. But everybody that caught fish, they won't give you all the information, and I don't ask for it. I said, all I want to know is how deep you caught your fish. I don't want to know where. I don't want to know around what. I don't care what you were throwing. What did I miss? How deep did you catch them? And they're all like 2 feet or less. I'm like, I totally discounted that. They're like, yeah, well, that's how we caught them. And that was consistent. So fishing history burned us in that event horribly. But you can turn it around too. We won the tournament a year before and we zeroed the following year fishing the same stuff. But we also had a tournament on the Mohawk River out of St. Johnsville where it was in the fall of the year. I forget the year, but that was the only other tournament we fished where we didn't weigh in a keeper. That happened twice over the 14 years we were partners. We were the guys who always got a limit. And when we came in with no fish, people were like, you guys always get a limit. They're sandbagging. They got a big sack again. I'm like, no, we caught fish, but no keepers. And that was a horrible event for us. We just couldn't get anything together.
Well, sometimes you got to be humble to get better.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what, I've fished over 220 tournaments. I have 13 wins. I've got 58 top five finishes. That's a good record. But I will tell you this, if you're going to fish tournaments, know going in, you are going to lose way more than you are going to win. Even the top names in pro fishing, like Kevin Van Dam, one of the winningest anglers, the winningest angler of all time. His win percentage is like 5% of the time.
Hmm.
And that's the hard reality. One guy's going to win. Everybody else is going to lose. Oh yeah. Second place, first loser is what most people say. I'm happy. I am thrilled to place. I prefer to win. Everybody does. There's nobody out there fishing tournaments, despite what they tell you. And I've heard guys say, you know, I don't do this to win. I just like to fish. I'm like, all right. I call total BS on that. There's nobody paying an entry fee to compete unless they think they can win. You know, you can fish for free as much as you want without paying an entry fee. If you're plunking down an entry fee, it's because you believe you can win and you hope you will, and you're going to get a return on your entry fee investment. Right. So when people say, well, I just do this because I like being around the guys and I like to fish. BS. You can do that without paying an entry fee every day.
So what are we getting into in part three? Tease me.
That's going to be a surprise.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be a surprise. Now, I want to finish that Mohawk tournament.
Sorry. I don't mean to rush you. I'm sorry.
We get off track easily. There's so much ground to cover. Now, so much water to cover. We fished this tournament on the Mohawk River, didn't catch a fish that measured, came in zero fish to weigh in, watched the guys win, shook their hand. First, second, third place, we shook all their hands, didn't even ask questions. We went back the following year, same pool, we won the tournament easily. So, I mean, I've been on both ends of that spectrum where you win, go back, and zero, or where you zero and you go back and you win. A lot of tournament memories, still competing, can't wait to get going this year. Hopefully get another win in the box and go from there. Part three will close out tournament do's and don'ts and rules of etiquette and stuff like that. But I hope it's helpful to the guys, and I mean, especially to Steve, who asked for this. And like I said, I can talk about tournaments till I run out of air. I just love to compete. I love to fish. I'm passionate about it. And when I'm on the water, I feel like I'm in my zone. But when it's a tournament, when you have paid money to compete and measure yourself against everybody else in the field, the difference is, and this is still true to this day, I've been doing tournaments over 30 years. Every strike is electric. It's just a whole different level when you're competing.
Mm-hmm.
And the camaraderie with the guys that you know, and you learn a lot. And it's just, it's in my blood. Can't stop doing it. And I love it.
So, that's okay.
There it is.
Good deal. All right. You finished your thought on Mohawk.
Yeah. For the most part.
As always, if you have any questions for us, comments, or concerns, give us a ring over at anglerwithinpodcast@gmail.com, or, which is what is happening more often, hit up Roy directly, slide into his DMs, and ask him there at Roy Bilby, all lowercase, on Instagram.
I'm getting comments through Instagram, instant messages, texts from friends every single week, commenting just positive feedback about this podcast. It humbles me, and I'll tell you what, I appreciate every comment. Everything has been so positive. I appreciate it tremendously. Glad you're enjoying it. Every week, I promise I will do my best to help you tap into your Angler Within.